Well, 3 days from now will be the 10th anniversary of what I'm guessing, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but what I'm guessing is our next guest's biggest goal in the National Hockey League. And I say that because on Sunday, May 9, 2004, in a game that was played at the HP Pavilion in San Jose, the Calgary Flames and the San Jose Sharks were tied at 3. They go into overtime at 8. And I'm just going to adjust the clock on my own here. I want to say at about 18:39, Steve Monador started slapping the ice like a crazed beaver, wanting a pass from Jerome Iginla. He got that pass. He scored the overtime winner. Calgary takes game one of that series and, of course, would beat the Sharks in 6. And very pleased to have join us down the Subway Restaurant Fresh Take Hotline, Mr. Steve Monador. Did I correctly capture the spirit of the thing, Steve?
Yeah, you would tie that with, you definitely put it very eloquently. I would say probably my first goal in paperweight hockey,
okay.
I was 5 years old, might have been almost as equal, but
right.
Yeah, you're right. It happened to be Mother's Day that day, too, which was pretty special because I was able to on-air live say happy Mother's Day to my mom, who was watching back on CBC. So it was, it was very special. And, you know, what I remember from that series, but that particular play was, a couple of the Sharks had taken a change. I think they thought that my D partner and I were going to be changing, and it felt like the Moses had parted the sea, and I was just trying to get Jerome's attention as well as I could. And I know he's a shooter, shooter first, but obviously we know he's a good player and can see the ice. And yeah, you know, a lot of people thought that they're like, wow, and they don't say this, but. And I had such great patience on the play and whatnot, but I remember the ice wasn't so great, and the puck was rolling, so I waited it out to get it flat, and I think that's what sold Nabokov to come all the way over. So it was a pretty special day in my hockey career, that's for sure.
I mean, the thing, and I kind of mentioned it, but what really jumped off the page to me was how emphatically you wanted that puck from Jerome, and I don't mean that in a bad way, because it was a conversation that Mike Rogers and I had, that during the playoffs, when you get to this level, you can't be meek. You have to want to be the guy. And I thought it was so great that here was this young defenseman saying, give it to me, Jerome. Give it to me. I want to be the guy. And I always, that was always emblematic of when you talk about that. I always thought that goal was emblematic of that.
Yeah, it's, you do want the puck. A lot of the times you don't want to put a fire alarm out and make yourself known that much, but I was just so open because the two defensemen played it like a 2-on-2, and
sure.
I came in late, and I remember Dave Lowry, I don't know if it was that night or the next day, but he's like, great play, Monty, you know, way to call for that puck, and I'll never do it again. Because you don't normally want to do that, you give yourself away, but the play was so blatant that I did want to be in that position and obviously get that puck at that time. I mean, I just knew that I was that open. I didn't know what I was going to do with the play and any of that jazz. So it was really cool nonetheless. It was a really fun experience, a fun series, a fun everything. I mean, I was coming in my own as a player, and, our team gelled. I mean, the city was doing really well, was, you know, financially kind of coming out from under when the rest of the country was going down. I mean, there's so many, not the rest of the country going down, you know, North America, but
yeah.
It was just a really good time in Calgary's history as a whole, the Flames as an organization. Just a lot of things were really special then, and it was a really fun time. And every time I see any player, I'm living in California at the moment, and you know, I see Robin Lehner from time to time, and you know, instantly those moments come back to the forefront because of how much fun we had. And that was the one thing that I think I remember the most, is just, you know, we were sort of the underdog all the way around. We didn't play it up too much, like we didn't deserve to be there, but we just sort of felt like we had completed each other, and we felt like, if anyone wants to try to stop that time because we believed in each other. And, you know, we came close, and I know there was, I see Marty Jelena from time to time when the Flames are in town, and he was actually, I know Peter Barr recently retired, which is sad for the Calgary Hockey Stadium. But, you know, Jelly and I, he was down on vacation with his wife last week in California. We met up and we left Peter a message. And, you know, every time something like that happens, you know, 10 years has gone by, but the feelings and the connections just keep flooding back when we, you know, reminisce about those things.
Yeah, talking to Steve Monador down the Subway restaurant, Fresh Take Hotline, that season for you, I want to deal with it from two angles. One as a team, but personally for you, I think a lot of people forget, Steve, that it wasn't necessarily a great regular season, but it turned into a great playoffs, and I think that's what everybody remembers. You were such a huge part of that playoff run, but the regular season, it was really difficult for you to find regular work, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think I only played maybe 25 games in the regular season. I mean, it really motivated me. You know, I have a lot of respect for Daryl Sutter, and he didn't even play me that much until I got pissed off enough to show it on the ice. And, you know, that's not usually the context you want to have in a situation like that, but at the same time, you do want to be playing. And I didn't just feel like I was happy to be there. I felt like I deserved to be there and wanted to be there. So, you know, my context shifted as I was given the opportunity. A couple of defensemen went down in the first round, end of the first round, that eventually let Mike Commodore and I get into the lineup, and I was fortunate enough to stick it out for the rest of the playoffs, you know, when Tony Ludman came back. And so I was really, you know, just circumstances and the timing. And, you know, I was growing as a person, as a player at the time, and so I felt like it was just you know, it was all worth it. I was able to look back on that and use that reference experience to guide me in how I would propel myself and prepare myself for future games and seasons and situations that I was in. So, you know, I can look back on it as a great opportunity, but, you know, emotionally I wasn't always the happiest, although I didn't let it show, obviously to not be playing. So, you know, in the end it was all worth it.
You mentioned Mike Commodore. I mean, again, one of those stories that I think kind of gets glossed over is the injuries that this club went through on that run, and it was particularly on the back end. I mean, Brennan Evans. We all remember Brennan Evans getting that, you know, the famous two shifts in the Detroit series. Can you just talk, you know, you look back 10 years from now, can you just talk about how you guys as a group of defensemen kind of got through that whole playoff run, considering how banged up you were?
You know, it was one of those things that we didn't really have any star defensemen by any means on the back end. We had a star goalie and then we had a star player in Strom up front. But for the most part, Strom, as solid of a player as he is, he comes across with a blue-collar mentality and that he's willing to mix it up and rough it up. And that was really emblematic of the whole team. So, and as a core defenseman, you know, I don't know if many people know this, but Daryl ran the defense and the forwards. At the same time, which is, I've never seen any coach ever do that in my whole career. And so I think what that kept us on a level playing field as far as forwards and defense and how we relied on each other all so much. So, you know, and the thing about playing for Daryl is it keeps it really simple. You know, you find somebody else on the other team that you're sort of, who's your match, who's your sort of, your opposite player, the player that's the same as you on the other team, and just be better than him. And, you know, the game isn't, it's not necessarily easy, but you can make it simple. Or you can make it harder, depending on who you are and how you do it. And Daryl's the type of guy that likes to keep things simple. And goalie's got to be better than the other goalie and so forth. And so for me, I found that what worked the most was to stick into the game plan. And the game plan was get back, get the puck, get it up the boards, and it'll protect my life and you know, stay solid that way. So that's pretty much, you know, how I looked at it for the most part, and I think collectively as a team. So everybody had to step up. Everybody had to step up in, you know, bigger roles. And, you know, there's a lot of underrated play of people like Rhett Warner, obviously Robin Regier, Andy Ferentz. I mean, there's just lots of lots of great stories there. And I'm still friends with a lot of those guys today still.
You mentioned Mika Kiprusoff, and again, it seems like yesterday, but it was 10 years ago that, you know, I think the rest of the league was really waking up to Kiprusoff as a starting goaltender. When was it for you and the rest of your teammates, you know, in that 03-04 season, when did you guys begin to believe in Kiprusoff?
He came to us. I don't remember the exact time, but it was halfway through the year, maybe a little bit later, I think. And he got hurt right away. And I remember Jamie, and he came in, he played awesome. And so we were just excited about that, but then he got hurt. So it was sort of lost on us, I think, a little bit. And I remember Jamie McLennan came in and played, and Roman Turk was hurt too. And Roman was backing up, and Jamie played with a broken sternum that nobody really knows about. I think he played for 2 or 3 weeks every game. Probably the most he'd started collectively in a little while, and he really stepped up to the plate. So we kind of had a belief in ourselves from kind of that point on. It's like, you know, we can stand up, and Jamie's, you know, he's putting his all his cards on the basket and really playing, giving it his all, and he was there. So I think when Mika came back, we had this belief in ourselves that it didn't matter who was in the net, didn't matter who was on the line in the lineup on D and up front, that we could get it done. And we started to believe in ourselves, and he just added to that. So and he added in a huge, huge way. So I think once he came back from that injury, that just propelled us, you know, to move forward. And then we made a couple trades. We ended up getting Chris Simon. Sean Donovan was having a great year, and just sort of, you know, people were really pushing and coming in and helping out. So, you know, certainly Mika was a big part of it, but a lot of it was just the belief that we had. And then the buzz was coming around the city. I think by All-Star break, we were in maybe 8th place or 7th place, and we ended up getting, I think, 6th place for the playoffs. So it was just one of those sort of slow, those trains starting, and it starts slow and just picked up a lot of momentum, and that carried us through the playoffs.
Steve Monitor, our guest, down the Subway Restaurant Fresh Take Hotline. Lots to talk about with Steve, focusing right now on 10 years ago and the 2004 run by the Calgary Flames to the Stanley Cup Final. I guess my last one on this topic, Steve, when you close your eyes and you're going to sleep or whatever, you think of 2004, what's that one thing that pops into your head? What's that one memory that you will carry about that particular time in your hockey career?
The first thing I think is just feeling like the whole community, the whole organization, and everyone in the dressing room, that there was such a connection out there. So just the relationship in the community of everybody. Because, you know, Calgary is a large city, but it feels like it's a small town, and that, you know, people respect each other and care for each other, and the city was growing, and it just felt special and felt very caring. And as a player, that's huge thing to feel a part of the community. I think in any business you might be in, it's just great to be to feel a part and to feel, I guess, maybe relevant, but also that you're contributing and giving back too in a way. And so it was just such a nice connection that we had as a team and individuals with the people at Calgary. Because, you know, when I go back there, you know, there's still some people that I go and see that aren't in the hockey community, but you know, they bring it up, and we have that connection, you know, from that time. And I know that the standards have been raised in Calgary since then. And it's certainly a new era now, but, and, you know, you don't want to live off the past. But at the same time, for me, it's special just to be around that and, you know, remember the good feelings that we had there then.
All right, let's bring it forward. Here we are talking about something that happened 10 years ago. In that time span, you put yourself a pretty decent hockey career together in the National Hockey League with some pretty interesting stops along the way: Florida, Anaheim, Boston, Chicago. But let's talk about right now. Steve, are you done with hockey? Have you retired from hockey?
Yes, I am. I'm happily done from playing hockey. I love playing, and I really like watching the game. I do get the juice watching the playoffs now, and feeling like I'd want to be out there. But I don't miss it, that I really want to play and do it every day. And you know, I've been figuring out what's next for me and whether I want to get back in the game. And I know I have some other things that I can contribute. But no, I'm retired from the game. I'm grateful for the career that I had, and I'm ready to move on, though, too.
When you say, I mean, where does the inner peace come from? Because, as you know, this can be, for some players, it can be very difficult to walk away. But, you know, the conversation that you're having with me right now, the conversations we've had in the past, you seem very much at peace at your decision.
Yeah, I am. I realized throughout my career that I really liked the game, but as my career went on, I don't think that I had the passion that I once did in the past. And I certainly had some injuries near the end of my career, you know, some head injuries that I fully recovered from now. And I just realized that I think there's more out there for me. And I'm dwelling on the things that I'm going to be moving into next, but I'm not 100% sure just yet. But I felt that I wouldn't want to have a teammate that wasn't fully invested with mind and heart, and I wasn't able to bring that or want to bring that, I guess, near the end. And so I think I knew it was time. And now the one thing that's been a big challenge is you know, as an athlete and you know, a lot of people in general, it's nice to have a routine and have, you know, feel like there's a purpose for you and for me. And so I do miss that, you know, going to the rink every day and being around the guys and contributing and having fun on the ice. And so replacing that at the moment has been, you know, a challenge that took a little bit of time, because as much as I didn't want to create have my identity just to be as a hockey player, it certainly was a big part of my time. So, and my focus and energy. So I'm, but at the same time, I don't want to rush into make any major commitments just yet on what I'm going to do next, without being fully, invested in what that's going to be, and making the wrong decision is something I don't want to follow through with. So I've, you know, kept myself busy by getting involved with some community stuff down here and working out and training again and getting back, you know, healthy and working my kinks out that we developed as a hockey player along the way. And so that's kind of what's moving forward for me. And I'm happily and fortunate enough in a place where I can take a little bit of time and figure things out and see where I want to live and what I want to do. And when you decide that I'm ready enough to come be a co-host with you, then maybe I'll come there, you know?
Well, you know, the chair's always there.
Yeah, right.
Now, let me, by the way, in conversation with Steve Monador down the Subway Restaurant Fresh Take Hotline, I hope you don't mind me asking the newsy questions here, but you had injury troubles towards the end of your career, right? You had concussion issues?
I did, yeah. I had a couple of concussions and then had some sort of relapse, so to speak, where I thought I was fully recovered and all the tests and whatnot showed some things. And certainly a lot of it was psychological and that and even mental with as far as reaction time and certain things that I've since learned and would use to recover quicker from that I didn't know at the time and nobody did. And so, yeah, and it was a challenge. I mean, you take anybody that is physically active and even not, and you know, you put them in your basement and on the couch and you know, with little stimulation and not much TV and, you know, don't read too long and challenge yourself and it becomes depressing and, it just sounds depressing now saying it. So I did become, you know, you could call it depressed in the sense that I didn't know what was wrong with me. And I didn't feel worthy in a sense because I just got into this depressive state where there was no, you know, low light and no stimulation and not much personal contact with people. And I actually ended up compounding the problem I've since learned as opposed to sort of breaking through. And one of the things with concussions that I've since learned is that it's okay to stimulate yourself and break through. And what I would, on a rudimentary sense, compare it to, say, getting a Charlie horse. I mean, you're not just letting your leg just sit there and until it feels better. You have to get it in motion and do some things to get them blood flow and then allow for things to get the best type of blood flow to the area. And that is what I didn't do with my brain. So I didn't have much blood flow. My neck was bothering me. So the post-concussive symptoms weren't a concussion so much as just lack of blood flow and lack of treatment and lack of stimulation that sort of just had the cobwebs sort of filter onto the brain and what would feel like many relapses along the way was just my brain sort of working through those issues that I created by just sitting there for so long. And right now I'm not telling anyone that if you get a concussion they go back and freak out and running around and doing things like you did the day before right away, but it's not a bad thing to push through it a little bit and to feel some symptoms. You know, barring that, you know, you're not going, you're not feeling too sick and dizzy and, you know, passing out or anything. But, so the long and short of it is that, those types of scenarios and that situation, the things that I've learned, have given me and put me in a unique position to have that knowledge that I could pass on to other young hockey players or athletes, and non-athletes alike, as well as sort of the spiritual stuff that comes with being in a place like that and coming out of it, and moving forward and so, it's been a worthwhile experience, I'll tell you that, but right. I wouldn't have been able to say that at the time, that's for sure.
Steve, are you comfortable with the care that you received, or was that an issue at all by any of the clubs that involved?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's continuously evolving. That
right.
One fault, unfortunately, that a lot of people say is that they know what they know and they don't know what they don't know, and I was in that exact position, and so I ended up pushing some boundaries to try and find more people that knew more than me and maybe different aspects of what people from one area of expertise wasn't familiar with, and would try a number of different things just because, I didn't want to necessarily try to have too many cooks in the kitchen, but at the same time, I wanted to get as many perspectives as possible and then try and see what felt right. And some of the people along the way, as far as, just really working on your neck, muscularly, skeletally, nutrition-wise, a lot of things that the answer that was best known to me that came along the way that I started to get some solace was that I found somebody that just would tell me some things, and I'm like, well, that makes sense. And that was just sort of, whenever I made that statement, I knew that I was in the right place. And sometimes if people don't know something and they were courteous enough to say, I'm just not really sure, I respected that too. But I was also willing to see people that looked at things from a different perspective, because when you really take somebody and put them in a position like I was in,
yeah.
A lot of factors really come into play that you wouldn't normally think. So a lot of hormonal imbalances and nutrition imbalances that come from not being physically active and energetically, and that sort of works to the the psychological aspect of how you feel as a person, as well as emotionally and spiritually, in that sense that doesn't really get looked at as much as I think some of the physical stuff. So, was I comfortable and whatnot? Yeah, I mean, I was uncomfortable in that I didn't feel very good, and I
right.
think that uncomfortability pushed me to try and search, to seek out people and try and just feel like I was taking care of myself and my personal care to try and to get some answers. And I think the NHL in general has. They've done a great job as far as concussion research and protocol, but I
sure.
think we're a long way off. There's a few people out there that are doing some things that, because it's so new and fresh and not completely documented just yet, that, ruffle some feathers. But at the same time, we're continuously evolving, and we certainly don't know everything, even though we, to some degree, think we do in this day and age.
Not to completely, by the way, in conversation with Steve Monitor down the Subway Restaurant Fresh Take Hotline, not to completely get bogged down in one topic, but you're a unique guy in the sense of when you came into the sport and when you leave the sport. When you were undrafted, you go to the American Hockey League, you and I have had these conversations, you're literally fighting every night to get to the next level. You leave the game with a greater awareness than ever before in terms of what can happen with head injuries. You mentioned you had a couple at the end of your career. Do you ever think back to the beginning in St. John? I mean, are you dealing with cumulative effects of maybe a decade in the NHL, the American Hockey League?
No, I think that's what maybe compounded the issues at the end, had I not dealt with them a certain way at the beginning of my career. So if I'd known then what I know now, I would have acted differently. We all would have. And that's
right.
sort of that's just a sign of the times continuously. Over the last of the 20th century, and obviously for years before. So I think I was at the time. All of the tests and the things that I've done thus far show that I'm completely healthy, and all of the imaging and post-imaging things that I've done, and the blood work and the nutrition and just how I feel training now and with the exercise that I do, I don't think that there's any adverse effects anymore, but I think the issues, that, like I said, that did come up
sure.
and added to those slips and relapses that I had with my injury were certainly perhaps compounded from before, and that's one of the things that I've been sharing with the NHLPA and with friends that have gone through some concussions, that if they're ever willing to talk and want to talk about it, I feel like I have a unique perspective of the amount of time and energy and, money and wherewithal that I put into the research and moving forward to, from my own case. And so it's a cool thing because I can talk from experience as opposed to, I certainly don't have, I'm not an MD and I don't have a PhD or anything, but,
right.
But I do have a PhD in hockey to a degree, and certainly just this life experience of what I've gone through and what I've been there. I think that any doctor that can relate to me in a certain way based on personal experience, I find an easier connection with than somebody that's just telling me something of, perhaps something that they read. And
sure.
By no means am I discrediting, doctors in general or anything like that. It's just I feel very fortunate to be able to share this information that I've read.
Would you do anything different? If you had to do it all over again, 571 National Hockey League regular season games, about 150 in the American Hockey League, a very good pro career, would you do anything different knowing what you know now?
Yeah, if I knew then what I know now, sure, I would have taken certain things different.
Sure.
Diet-wise, training-wise, I came into an era when training was really propelling itself, and it's certainly evolved since then, but... yeah, I would have done some things differently had I known, but I don't think I would have been able to learn the things that I did if I didn't go through those experiences. And some of them are injury-wise, and some of them are training and diet, and, I took care of myself, and, the mental part of the game and how I prepared for games. And, the one thing that I think that I realized, and this was just where I was at, especially in the minors and then certainly early in my NHL career, was I'd get pretty nervous and anxious for games and would beat myself up if I wasn't doing things perfectly because I tried to stay in the lineup. And that was one of the reasons why I fought so much. I would have sat back in my first agent, Steve Casper, former player and coach, who played a lot of years and had a lot of injuries and concussions just like me, and he's since recovered. But, he would remind me all the time. He's like, hey, don't forget to stop and smell the roses. You're very fortunate to be doing what you're doing, and don't belittle that fact, and just enjoy it. And I think I took myself away from that sometimes, just trying to be too worried about, ice time and whatnot, and having fun. So if any kid ever talks to me about, what to take to make it and whatnot, I'd say, well, you got to be a good skater and make sure you're having fun with the game, no matter what it is. And I know the pro game is different than junior and minor hockey in a large, large way, but you want to make it fun, whatever that looks like for you. And so... So that's probably the biggest thing that I would have, looking back, I think I would like to, I had a ton of fun, don't get me wrong, and
right.
I'm not saying it wasn't fun, but I think there's, to some degree, I just put too much pressure on myself for what my perceived notion of success was.
All right. What I'd like to do, Steve, because there's so many things that I want to talk about, and we don't have all day, so I'm going to little rapid fire here for you. You finished your professional hockey career this past fall in the KHL. What was that like? What was that experience like for you?
It was a great experience for me in that I realized that I didn't want to play anymore. But having said that, there's great hockey in the KHL. I think they need to take a lot of steps in the right direction as far as travel. I know, I don't know the airline company, but I do know that locomotive crashed with a couple of years ago. And as tragic as that story is and the changes that the KHL says they make, teams are still flying on those planes. And I remember flying on a plane that had duct tape on some of the chairs and that medical tape and some of the chairs were loose and it didn't feel very safe. And so I'm glad that I did it because I realized it was certainly a way that I didn't want to end my career anymore. And Russia, it's a tough place to live and play. I mean, there's a lot of great people there and great hockey players and some towns, in situations that just, it seems like they're just struggling to survive under the pressure of, what people do day to day there. And maybe hockey can give them a little reprieve from the day to day. But it just goes to show you the full end of the spectrum of how we live in this world.
Two lockouts. You saw two National Hockey League lockouts. You were a part of both of them. I know you have, ties to the NHLPA. What did you learn? What did you gain in terms of life experience, business knowledge from going through those two?
That any big business is just about people, money, power, and ego, and control, and that if you stick together, you can make great things happen. And I think to a degree we did that as players, and to a degree we didn't do that as players. And so patience, fortuitousness. Belief, those are things that, your context and your integrity are things that, if you have good terms for yourself, you don't need to ever sell out.
Let's Let's have a little fun here. Steve Monitor is our guest down the Subway Restaurant Fresh Take Hotline. Best player you played against?
Sid Crosby, Peter Forsberg, and Marian Hossa.
Oh, really?
Marian Hossa is the best player I ever played with.
Okay. Really?
Overall.
Wow. And because that Chicago team included Taves and Kane.
Hey, both of those are phenomenal players. But if you watch a Chicago Blackhawks game, just watch Marian Hossa, how gifted he is offensively and how hard he works defensively. I know he's a winger, so, you know, he's not up for the Selke Trophy like most Selke finalists are. But he, in my mind, is right there every year. He's a back checker. He creates more turnovers than most. You know, he's just a solid person and human being, but an even better teammate, too. So, overall, he's hands down my top teammate player, person that I played with.
Did you have a nemesis? Did you have that one guy that just kind of rubbed you the wrong way in the league?
Yeah. Well, I fought Cam Jansen once, four times in 1 year, I think twice in one game. I was in Florida, he was in New Jersey. We seemed to play each other. It felt like we did a lot, but I didn't like to fight a lot of the time, but I did, and he was a pretty strong guy and liked to hit really hard, and so he was one guy, but let me come back to that.
the craziest guy, the nuttiest guy, the kind of that wild guy that you played with. And I mean, the reason I ask that is because I have this memory of you and Ville Niemenen and Mike Commodore down at the Dome after Game 7 and beating Vancouver. And Joe Sports was talking to you guys. And I'll relate this story because I'm halfway down the path anyway. And the question Joe asked you guys was, you know, you're shaking hands. What do you say in that lineup? And I thought, what a fantastic question. And I think you were the first guy to answer. And you were kind of going, well, I knew a couple guys in junior, so, you know, I just, hey, good series, and that's what Commodore said. And then I remember Niemenen turns to Joe and says, yeah, I told him to break out the Speedos. Who is the wackiest and craziest guy you ever played with?
I mean, there's a lot. I mean, I remember playing with Mike Motto in the minors. He's just a solid, solid human being. But just a jokester on and off the ice in a lot of
yeah.
ways. Darcy Verreault, probably, actually. That's great. He played a little bit in Pittsburgh up in the NHL. I think he's still in the KHL, but I played with him in St. John's for the Flames Final Club my second year.
Right.
And he was, he was one bad push in the wrong direction by an opponent from going off the cliff. And then the other person that was similar like that, in that you certainly respected him because he'd done everything, was Chris Simon.
Right.
You didn't want to rub pass the wrong way with Chris Simon because... he could score goals. He could beat up pretty much anyone in the league, and it was incredible just to see him, you know, evolve his career. I think he's still playing in the KHL as well.
Steve Monitor is our guest on the Subway Restaurant Fresh Take Hotline. In terms of coaches or influence, who had the greatest on you in your pro career?
Jim Playfair is the first one that comes to mind by far because. We consider each other good friends now, although we didn't act like it sometimes my first couple of years pro, because we butted heads, but he just ended up making me a better player. And I think the belief that he had in me and the belief that I eventually had in myself and really spawned my career and our friendship. And certainly Daryl after that, but Daryl Sutter, but it was certainly Jim Playfair to start.
and I hope you don't mind me telling this tale out of school. You and I had this conversation almost 10 years ago, and I remember Jim Playfair talking to me about how proud he was of you. I appreciate the fact that there is that coach-player relationship, and he pushed you really hard, but it's really neat for me all these years later that, you know, you have that respect, the two of you have that respect, because and you told stories about St. John's when you were down there. I mean, that's a Calder Cup trophy team. It was a good club, but it wasn't easy for you, was it?
No, I didn't play a ton my first year pro either. I think I maybe played 40 or 50 games out of 80, and we dressed seven defensemen a lot of time. I played forward a bunch of times, and I was just coming in my own learning the pro game and realized that I had to get in better shape, and I had just to learn some things. And by the end of the year, I was a regular in the lineup. But, you know, it took me to getting to the point where I was just too fed up, and I went into Jim's office, And Ron Wilson, not the Ron Wilson former Leafs coach, but former fantastic player Ron Wilson, was the assistant coach, and they shared an office. And I went in there, and I just said, and this was sort of, I'd been talking to my agent, Casper, I was telling you about, my first agent, that he's like, hey, if that's how you feel, get in there and talk to him. And I went in there, and I just said, you know, Jimmy, you know, very politely, you know, but certainly, like, I'm better than some of the defensemen you're playing in the lineup. You know, basically saying it's BS that I wasn't playing. And I remember Ron Wilson telling this later. He was like, beat it, buddy. You're going out of the – I mean, he didn't say this in the meeting, but he said, you know, for coming in and telling the coach what he should be doing, you know, you should be that sent down to the minors. And Jimmy, and to his credit, he took it in and he said, okay, great. Now, and basically said, now it's on you. I'm going to be watching you, and if you get an opportunity, you better do something with it. And it made me bring my all from that. And so I remember a couple of weeks later, somebody went out on the back end, and I went in. And then when that player came back, I stayed in. And it was a really good lesson for me because I realized that I can control my fate if I choose to change my context around who and how I want to be, as well as I called myself out, and I really put myself out on the line, and I had to step up. And it was the first step to me believing that I could have a pro career.
What a great story, Steve Monitor, I guess. Before I let you go here, pal, you've got a couple of three, actually, former clubs of yours that are still in the postseason in Chicago, in Boston, and Anaheim. I know you had, you know, just brief tenures in all of those places, but are you still a fan of the game? Do you still watch the games?
I do, yeah. I've been to a few LA games and one in Chicago when I was there recently. And it's great hockey right now. It's, you know, the Boston-Montreal series is exciting. And, I mean, I think everyone's fairly surprised with how high-scoring the games have been.
Yeah.
And certainly the comebacks that have happened. And I think it's great for the game. I think it's phenomenal. You look at a team like LA, who I've been able to watch in person quite a bit. And for a team that didn't, and historically with Darryl, hasn't scored a ton of goals, and they played great defense, really came out and, you know, when they went down 3-0 to San Jose in the third game, I think could have gone certainly either way. Obviously, it was an overtime. But, you know, they were losing 6-3, 6-4, 6-5 or whatever it was, 7-5. But they were scoring goals. And so I knew they could easily – I think it's easier to tighten up defensively than it is to score offensively. So not that I would have predicted a 4-0 or a four-game comeback, but it's exciting to see them turn around. And I think it'll be L.A., Chicago, and the Western Conference, and – I think Boston, although they have their hands full now, will come out of the East. Although Pittsburgh's really on fire, too. Fleury's had two shutouts in a row now, and that's pretty exciting for Pittsburgh. And so I think it'll be a Pittsburgh-Boston Eastern Conference.
Dude, you're right on top of this. I mean, surely look, if you've got some free time, I can always use an analyst on Hockey Central at noon. If you've got some free time, I'd love to use you because you seem like you're right into this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I check, you know, I'm watching the games and checking the highlights and, you know, reading the clips afterwards. And the easy thing for me, thank you, I'd love to do that is what I'm getting at. But it's nice to follow. You mentioned the three teams that I played for that are still playing. So there's a lot of players that I know that are still playing. So I'd like to follow up with my friends and see how they're doing and obviously the teams and feel like I have a little bit of knowledge on what's going on there and some of the friends that I have to talk to. So. Yeah, I'd happy to be a guest.
It's a done deal because here we are talking about your career. You know what? The end of this week, we're going to get you on, and we're gonna turn the tables here. We'll put the screws to you. We'll let you get in there and mix it up and analyze some of this playoffs. How about that? You like that? Does that work for you? You want to try it?
I'm in.
Done.
That works for me. Thanks.
Done.
Thank you.
All right, buddy. Before I let you go, congratulations. I've got a very soft spot for guys who were never drafted into this league, and you were never drafted into this league, but you managed to find a way to carve yourself quite a career and be in some neat places. But better than that, you are one of the good guys. It's always been a pleasure to talk to you, and I say that because I know that every time you came in with the visitor, you always, you know, sought out the locals and always said hello. So you're always a very classy guy to us, and we appreciate it. And I know you got a lot of fans here in Calgary. So congratulations on your career, Steve. Best of luck with whatever comes next, and strap on those boots because I'm going to put you to work later this week.
Oh, my pleasure, and thanks for having me on, and I look forward to being on again.